You are listening to Clearly Connected, a podcast that inspires new ways to reconnect to ourselves, to others, and to our natural environment in a world where so many of us are disconnected. I'm your host, Carrie Doan. I'm a life coach, an entrepreneur, an advocate for change, and a believer in all things possible. Today, I'm joined by my guest, Ben Crawford, to talk about how to set bold boundaries in our relationships. Boundaries are the tools that we have to teach people how to treat us. And so Ben and I discuss why they are so important and exactly how to communicate them effectively. I'm so glad you're here to join us as we move closer to a more deeply connected way of living. Welcome back, all you beautiful people. Today, I am excited to have my friend and best-selling author, Ben Crawford, here to talk about something that I personally have struggled with for years, and that is how to have better boundaries. I have come to learn that boundaries are this tool that we have to teach people how to treat us, and yet so many of us, especially women, really struggle to know how to assert them effectively. So Ben, you've taught me so much about boundaries, and I'm really glad to finally have you here on the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Can you hear me okay and everything?
Yeah, you're coming through loud.
Yeah, it's funny because of all the things, when you said, you know, I think we've talked about being on this podcast for a while now, and finally you said, yeah, I want you to talk about boundaries. I was like, boundaries? Why boundaries? Like, of all the things. But I guess it's had an impact on you, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's been one of these topics that as I go on through life, it's becoming more and more clear to me what they are and how important they are to have. And you were one of the people in my life, I want to say a couple years ago, who really helped me to understand more about how to have them effectively in my relationships. And I remember at the time saying things to you like, oh, I feel like such a bulldozer when I'm talking like this. And you were like, no, actually, that's just your perception. This is actually normal and healthy what you're doing. And so it's been a really transformative, process or tool that I've used that has helped me a lot in my relationships, which is why I wanted to have you here to share your insights on this stuff.
Yeah, it's really funny because now that I think back to my own like boundary journey, I suppose, you know, we were in therapy and had the help of a therapist, and it was like really, really hard work to create our like first boundaries that we had in our life. And now it's not even something like I'm aware of is a thing. It's just kind of like one of those background processes that run in my mind that I forget even takes energy because it's like normal now.
Yeah. I was reflecting on, you know, some of the ways that I would kind of witness you and your family a couple of years ago, how I thought to myself, you have this amazing ability to just be direct and like detach from the situation. And my MO I've been this highly empathetic person who tends to really get involved with other people's emotional experience and oftentimes would assume responsibility for their emotions. And since then I've learned to kind of separate that or detach with boundaries. But I remember watching you do that kind of naturally and scratching my head, like, how do you do that? How do you like just kind of take that or create that space between you and that person? And it doesn't even seem to bother you. So I think it's just probably organic now at this point for you. But I it's been a lot of work, I know, for me too, to be able to even figure this out. So
yeah, I mean, it wasn't always natural. And I don't know, I think being empathetic and getting in other people's business can be nice if you're aware that you're doing it and if it's optional, like if you're choosing it. But I think maybe a lot of people, including myself at certain points in my life, it doesn't feel optional. You don't know you're doing it. You don't know there's another way. And you compulsively do it. You have to, like, you can't, there's no idea in your head of where I end and you begin. So if someone's in the room or if someone starts talking about certain topics that involve me or even don't involve me, I'm like in it, like I'm feeling it and I'm drawn in, which is nice sometimes, but sometimes it's really not nice. When you have a lot going on and you have other priorities and when you're not doing too well with your health mentally or physically and you need to prioritize yourself, being drawn into someone else's stuff can be dangerous.
Yeah, so let me ask you, you know, through your process of kind of noticing that, is it just a matter of self-awareness to be able to say, oh, I can see that I'm doing this compulsive thing versus that sort of, I don't know, natural engagement in a conversation with somebody?
Is it self-awareness? I think that's a huge step. You know, I guess I would say that maybe there's two steps. It's probably the first. The second step would be like just the choice itself. So even sometimes I'm self-aware and I'm really getting caught up in, let's just say, family drama right now with like either my kids or in-laws or just other people, not me. And it can, even if I'm aware, it can still be a difficult choice to say, should I stay involved in this drama, like emotionally or otherwise, or should I create a boundary and pull back and, let's just say, go running or do yoga instead, or think about my book, or, you know, create that kind of a fence to create a gap between me and this thing. And those are two almost separate steps, I think.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to articulate it. As you're talking, I'm like thinking about, well, why is it that so many people struggle to create and maintain these boundaries? Like, are we conditioned in a way to be overly involved in people's lives? Or is it just something that's kind of a newer concept that's now being more openly discussed? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I saw your question that you asked this and I thought about it for a while. It's a really, it's a tough question, I think. I'm not sure, first of all, but I have a few ideas and observations. One is like, it's weird when people create boundaries or prioritize themselves like consciously, they're called like selfish. The irony is that I think everyone's selfish in a way, meaning that everyone prioritizes their own needs. I mean, you have to, like, to be a healthy human. But at some point, it's weird. It's everyone does it. It's kind of like porn in a way, where it's fine as long as you don't talk about it. Like, if you look at, you know, the Google search results in terms of, like, you know, porn sites are the number one sites, like, in the world. Like, everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people look at porn. And everyone kind of accepts that. But if you say, I look at porn, people are like, you pervert. You know, we have this weird double standard as a society. And I don't really understand that. But I think it happens in the same way where, I think this came up in conversation with you and me a while ago. I saw this video where it was like one of those comedic videos where this one guy was talking to his three coworkers and saying, hey, I have a party on Friday night. Are you guys coming? And the first guy goes, I am busy going to my kid's little league game. And the second guy goes, no, I'm moving my stuff. And the third person, who's a female, says, no, I'm not coming. I don't want to go. And the other two guys are like, wait, what do you mean you don't want to go? You mean you're sick? And she's like, no, I'm not sick. I don't want to go. And they're like, oh, you must be tired. And she's like, no, I'm not tired. I just don't want to go to your party. I'd rather be alone. And it, you know, it goes back and forth and it's, but they just, they're, it's pointing out how it's totally like, what's the word? like manners. It follows the society code to say like, oh, I'm really busy, or oh, I'm sick. But to say, no, I'm prioritizing myself and actually have a desire that conflicts with your desire is seen as like rude, which is kind of sad, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm immediately thinking about maybe some of the cultural messages or values on self-sacrifice that we hear, whether you hear that in like patriotic messaging or religious messaging. And it is, I think there is a certain level of programming, maybe we call it, or just that's the way we're taught to live. And so to do something different, to flip it around and say, no, I'm actually not going to sacrifice myself. I'm going to choose me. It goes against the grain, I think. And I would say too, I think, and I don't want to assume this, but I do think women, especially, there's a fear of disappointing other people. And maybe that goes with this kind of bent towards high empathy and not being able to separate your emotions from someone else's. But that fear of like, oh, I don't want to make them feel bad, which, I mean, emotions are just emotions, right? But there is that a thing that I think a lot of women struggle with. So,
yeah, there is a virtue to sacrifice in our culture that, like, take that other story I just told, the fictional one, where if I was to say, oh, I can't come to your party because I have to go to a kid's Little League game, everyone would say like, oh, yeah, okay. Where it's like, it's a Little League game. Like, why the fuck is that so valuable? All of us, you know, but just because it's not mine, all of a sudden people are like, oh, okay, that's valid. Oh, I want to share real quick, like how that video ended, because it's so funny. Cause you know, they're trying to pin this lady down and get her to say that it's like, there must be some other valid reason for why she doesn't want to go to the party. But then the first two people admit that they were lying, and that one of them is actually not moving and one of them doesn't have a sporting event to go to. They just didn't want to say that they didn't want to go. So it's actually not the boundary that's taboo. It's like telling the truth about the boundary.
Yeah. In a way. Oh, yeah. I think you said it. I mean, yeah, because people make stuff up all the time, because I know I've done that before. It's like, oh, well, this will be easier if I just say it's my kid or something.
Oh, and yeah. And like babies, man, people have a baby and they're like, oh, we got to go. It's nap time. It's like bullshit. Like, I mean, like how many, I feel so bad for these tiny creatures too, because like new parents, they get away with murder because anytime they don't want to do anything, they blame it on the baby. And the baby is like, meh, they can't defend themselves, right? So then everyone thinks babies are a pain in the ass because we all blame them because we don't want to say no to something.
Right. They're the scapegoat.
Totally. And it's not true. I mean, sometimes it's true. But as a young parent, it's one of those sad things, because in a way we're like getting away with something, like where you blame the kid and they can't defend themselves. But in another way, we're missing out on saying that, no, like what if your desire as the parent of the child is valuable enough, and owning it, there's actually a benefit that you're missing out on when you say, oh, it's for the baby's nap time. And it makes everyone think like my thing's not important. Like it shouldn't be important. And you feel guilty if you prioritize your thing and create boundaries around it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I kind of wonder, too, if, like, people don't know how to gracefully tell the truth in a way where, yeah, they're saying what they truly want, they're being honest about it, but delivering it in a way where that person will understand. And this is something that I've really been leaning into in the past year or two, is to be able to just to state plainly, you know, like, hey, I really appreciate the invitation. What I'm feeling right now is that my energy is depleted, and what I need most is to just have some time alone. So I don't know, just kind of like really practicing that, which I think is, you know, that's living with integrity, is being honest, but also learning how to do it in a way where you're not just like, I don't care about you, I don't want to do that kind of thing.
I mean, I hear what you're saying and I like that, and I suck at it probably, I guess. Well, I've gotten a lot better. But like, also, you know, sometimes the fact of the matter is I don't prioritize your thing. I don't like your thing, you know? And I also think that's okay. Like, you know, some people can be offended at that, but if we were honest, the thing that makes us, even you and I friends, or me and other people friends, isn't that we all like the exact same stuff. It's that we're different. And those differences are just as valuable, as, or sometimes more valuable even than the similarities. And they can be scarier, but I don't think it's kinder. I think the truth itself is kind. And when you're you know, this is one of the things about boundaries I've noticed, is that when you're not honest, it kind of puts a time stamp on the relationship and limits the amount of time or the amount of depth you're going to have as friends. So we have this high emphasis on etiquette and politeness and what you described as kindness in our culture, but sometimes that directly conflicts with intimacy. And one of the most kindest, intimate, compassionate things you can do that to people that you care about is to give them your truth. And some people are not going to accept you. So, you know, sometimes while I think people say that they're doing it for other people, oh, I'm being kind by telling you what you want to hear. That's actually not kind. That's just being a bitch. I don't know how to say it. Being a
liar?
Well, it's cowardly. Yeah. You know, it's, I don't mean that in a female way. I guess this is a podcast for females. So I don't mean bitch in a women. I mean a bitch for anyone. You know, like, you're taking the easy way out, and you're, I think sometimes it's just better to say that instead of claiming that you're doing it for out of kindness.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, I could take this down so many rabbit trails as it relates to, like, even people's ability to tolerate differences, but I think you're at the core of it, just being able to tell the truth and be plain about it is, I think, the most, kind thing to do, if that's the right word.
I think so. Can I give one other example? I totally forgot about this because it's just come up since we're talking, and I didn't even write it down, but, you know, speaking to how taboo boundaries are, most of my adult life has been as a like solo entrepreneur or self-employed, rather, is a better way to put it. But for a very little time, I had a boss as an adult, and it's so easy and accepted when people say, "Hey, can you hang out on Friday?" People say, "I have to work," meaning their boss has scheduled them and they have to show up on Friday. And when I set off into self-employed land, you know, and trying to be an artist and an author and a vlogger, various things that I've done, you know, the fact of the matter is you never have to work, right? Like I could postpone my work and party tonight, and then I could cram it tomorrow, or I could skip my weekend. And I found that because I didn't really have the confidence to say no to people and create boundaries for myself, I was always, my work got really shitty because I didn't know how to own it and say, no, I don't want to go to your thing because I actually want to work. You know, I wasn't able to say, oh, my boss is forcing me. And it was really hard. That was probably one of my first exercises in boundaries, was in prioritizing my own employment or creativity or artistic endeavors.
Mm. Well, and what I love about that too, is that it's a way that you are taking responsibility and owning your life, and not just being honest, but you're saying, you're not projecting it onto somebody else and making that excuse. You're just saying, like, this is what I want and this is what I'm prioritizing. And then maybe, you know, depending on who it is, you could say, you know, I really care about you, or I want to see you on this day, or if that's true. But instead of like being portrayed as sort of like this victim to your circumstances, you're just saying, this is how my life is structured. And I don't know. I think when people do that, it creates a certain type of I think I respect people who are that way. And so, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and implicit in that, there's going to be people that don't respect that, right? I mean, there's going to be people that say, like, oh, you're being rude. And I don't know, I saw this quote on one of those, like, meme type things, I guess, at one point, which was like, if people don't respect your boundaries, it's not you they really care about, or, you know, something like that. And so I think a lot of people that are maybe worried about offending people are worried about creating boundaries. But what you just said, like, when you create boundaries, two things happen. One is certain people that really are not caring about you will fall off, and they'll be like, oh, they'll just take offense to it and they'll disappear. But there's going to be other people that are actually attracted to the real you. And when you create boundaries, it actually, that truth, that kindness, you're actually making it visible to the types of people that are interested in who you really are, not just the etiquette or the show that you're putting on. And it's fun to find those people, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like even a practice of being more authentic too.
Totally.
So, okay, well, I want to pivot here real quick, because typically I like to start by asking people about their story. And I don't want to skip over this part, because this is where it becomes a little more personal, because I don't think I know the answer to this, but I'm curious to know, like, I think you said earlier, you've not really always had strong boundaries. Like, what was it like before you became aware of this and then started integrating them? Like, what were the catalysts? And can you give us a little bit of the context of your life and journey around this?
Yeah, so there's one story that comes to my mind right now, and I'm not sure how much context to provide, because, I mean, basically, like, I was never taught about boundaries. Growing up religious, I think I had, like, a really low self-worth. I mean, we were taught things like growing up Christian, like, Jesus loves you and you're so valuable. But at the same time, we were taught that it was really not us that was valuable. It was really just Jesus. So anything about us was like sin, or was supposed to be deprioritized. So I had very few boundaries. And I think the time that I remember that this became, like, really came to a head in my life, I got married and I had in-laws, and we would have these meetings where basically I would get, like, yelled at. Like, really yelled at. And this had never happened to me before. I didn't even know people yelled like this. And I was getting yelled at, like, just things that I thought were mean and were really hurtful to me. And I wouldn't really yell back, but I would try and stand up for myself. And I'd say these things, like, or at least in my head, I would say, like, this is not okay. Like, and I would go home and I would think about this, and because it was really hurtful to me and I didn't know how to process it. So for, like, hours, sometimes days and weeks, I would think, this person should not be yelling at me. They should know better. Why are they yelling? And I would just go on this loop forever and ever and ever, which is one of the big, now, like, I can see in hindsight, in defining boundaries, boundaries don't really have to do with other people so much as they have to do with yourself. And this is where I was stuck, because I was just thinking about this other person and I was like, they should not be yelling. They should not be doing this. Like, don't they know better? What is their problem? Are they stupid? Are they mean? Blah, 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 blah. You know, none of which solves the situation, but it seems like the most natural place to go. And if you talk to other people, that's where they tend to go too. And they're like, oh, you know, what a bitch, or how terrible, or, you know, they shouldn't do that. You know, and people can kind of, like, gossip in that way. And I forget where it was that I realized it, but there was this one incident where things blew up over Christmas and I got yelled at and we left for Christmas. We're like, what do we do about this? And it felt like a stroke of genius when it came to me. I mean, now it doesn't, but at the time I was like, oh my gosh, I'm fucking brilliant. And it was very simple. And instead of, like, telling the person, because I remember telling the person, you can't yell at me. And they were like, to hell I can't. I mean, they didn't use that language, but they yelled back at me like, Ben, you can't handle emotion. And it just turned into this big old fight, because I tell them what to do and they tell me what to do. But I remember, we had a meeting after this big explosion, and I didn't tell the person what they could or couldn't do. I very simply, and I don't even know if I had this language then, but I stated my boundary. And my boundary was this. It was, and a boundary, just to define it, I guess, is what I'm going to do. You know, that's it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, it might not even have anything to do with anyone else. And my boundary was, I don't want to be yelled at anymore. And I think for some reason, I just realized, oh, I have the choice. Mm-hmm. If this person yells at me, I don't have to sit there and take it. I can walk away. And like I said, that felt brilliant at the time. I was like, whoa, like, I feel like I just invented, like, you know, peanut butter or something. Like, cause I didn't know that. I thought when an adult starts yelling at you, you have to sit there until they're done.
Yeah.
And then say, sir, ma'am, may I please leave? Are you done yelling at me? That's how I acted. And it was the craziest thing because I just sat across the table from this person and I said, you know, you can yell, but the next time you yell, I'm going to leave. That was all I said. And you know what? It was the last time they ever yelled at me. And because I would have done it, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, I guess this is just one caveat. I need to get this in here because I think this is one of the biggest mistakes I and other people make about boundaries that I've seen is they talk about them. And I didn't even have to tell this person, you know, you can just do it. If a boundary is true, no one else needs to know about it because it doesn't have anything to do with them. Like if they start yelling, my boundary would be just leaving. The boundary isn't telling the person that you're going to leave. Because what happens is a lot of time people spend so much energy thinking boundaries are about other people. So they, the first thing when they create a boundary, they're like, I'm going to go tell everyone. And they sit people down. They're like, listen, if you ever do this, you can't do this anymore because I'm going to do that. And then, of course, the person starts yelling and they don't leave. Mm-hmm. And telling the person actually backfires because both for the person and yourself, because it kind of proves to them and yourself that you weren't even really that serious. So anyhow, yeah, so I told this person this thing and they, I just realized they never yelled at me again. And I was like, whoa, this is powerful. And not that I was controlling them because I wasn't. Everything I had done before then was trying to control them, being like, you can't yell. But I started controlling myself and I started saying, I'm not the type of person that wants to be yelled at anymore. And that was my boundary. And it was, man, it's weird thinking back about it now because that's where I was. That was such a hard thing for me to say. And now, you know, my boundaries are around much more complex and nuanced things. That seems like a basic building block now, like not getting yelled at. Like,
yeah.
But there's other things that are a little bit more maybe advanced, I don't know what to call it, like prioritizing my art or prioritizing my other desires like exercise, you know, which require more, maybe a little bit more proactivity, it seems like, to create boundaries around.
Yeah. Well, I love that story because it sounds like, you know, maybe at that point, at that juncture before you had that realization, maybe you had this belief like, oh, well, I don't know if you'd say I deserve this or I'm not, I don't have other options. I just need to take it. And then somewhere in there, you chose to believe something different, or you had an awareness of like, there are other options. I don't have to take this. And this is like the through line that I keep sensing through this conversation is like, I think especially with people who have low self-worth, that in this is promoted, I think, in religious circles and I don't know, patriarchal culture and all of it. But if you have that, then you're not going to believe that you have autonomy or power or that you do deserve to be treated poorly or victimized. And so the whole concept of boundaries, if that exists, is like so other to even be able to make that switch and say, oh, wait, actually, no, I deserve better, or I can choose something else, or I do have power in this situation. So that's, I don't know, as you're talking and articulating this, I'm just thinking like, what a cool way to not only own your life, but to be able to protect it and create this sense of safety around yourself that says, I'm worth something. I'm worth saying this out loud or walking away from this situation. And yeah, I mean, this kind of bleeds into this question that I proposed to you earlier before we got on here about this idea of taking your power back. And how is that, how would that connect to the practicality of setting boundaries? I mean, do you have any other thoughts you want to add to that?
Yeah, well, you know, to follow up with what you said, and maybe this ties in the question too, but I was raised thinking that what you want is important and what I want is not important, or certainly what you want is more important. So in the case with my relatives, you know, it's weird when you phrase it this way, that all of life is kind of a manifestation of what people want. So in that case, my relative wanted to yell at me, and I thought, and I wanted peace and quiet and civil conversation. But guess what? Because I believe that what she wanted was more important, that she wanted to yell, I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to get yelled at. So I think once I realized that all of life and relationships are just different iterations of what people want, like, why is yours more important than mine? And I'm not saying mine is more important than yours either, but I can't change what you want or whether you get it or not, but I can change my own. And I think the best relationships, you know, I used to think, going back to the sacrifice thing, that it was like really made good relationships, one person just sacrificed for the other, or both people sacrificed for each other. But I've also come to believe that makes actually like really shitty relationships. If both people are just sacrificing for each other and they're both, you know, not being themselves, in other words, for who they think the other person wants them to be, that's like not the types of relationships that really excite me. The relationships that really excite me is where I get what I want, and also you do too. But the only way I can really deliver that is by kind of going after and honestly representing what I want, which to do that, I need to know it myself, you know? And these are like, I think, you know, when people focus on what they want, they tend to focus on maybe the bad things oftentimes, or at least when we talk about selfishness, you know, there's always these weird examples people use of like, but there's what I've come to believe is most of the things I want, most of the things most people want are actually good at their core. Well, we don't always know how to go about getting them or achieving them. And I think it's a Gabor Mate I heard recently say, like, there's no such thing as a bad desire or bad need or bad want or something like that. Yeah. You know, there's probably certainly more unhealthy ways of going after it, but even that's a part of the process. I don't know if I answered your question at all.
Yeah.
I said some words. I know that.
Well, in all of that, I just hear the dignity of being a human. You know, like, we all have these needs we're trying to get met, and there are ways that we go about meeting them. Some of them maybe have higher consequences or can be destructive than others. But like, that's really at the core of what people are trying to do by creating boundaries, is to say, I'm trying to meet my needs. And sometimes that might be creating a protective fence. One question I wanted to ask you is, like, people pleasing, I know, is a form of having a soft boundary, which is kind of what you were saying about, I think, like, deferring to what this other person wants is the higher priority. So I was going to ask you, would you have ever identified yourself as that, like a people pleaser? Or would you call it something else?
You know, I would not have identified as that. But I was that. And that's where, I don't know, that type of, the religious environment I grew up in, you know, I don't know if I read this book called Missoula by John Krakauer, who was one of my favorite authors. And he wrote about, like, basically rape culture on, like, colleges and universities, and how specifically with women, how they're basically not trained to say no, especially religious ones. And coming from the background I come from, I've seen that. But I don't think what people realize is I had that too. You know, so while rape isn't as prevalent for males, you know, I had these like 6-7 figure business clients, 5-6 figure business clients that, you know, I didn't know how to say no to, or my coworkers or my bosses or even friends, because like my schedule was a mess, because if I got invited to something, it meant that I had to go unless there was a conflict with another friend. I couldn't have it conflict with something inside of me. So in that way, you know, when I look at what is at the core of people pleasing, you know, it has a kind of a silly name, as if you're running around like tickling people and strawberry shortcake and making them laugh like a bunch of unicorns. But at the end of the day, it's like my needs versus yours. And whose am I going to prioritize? And I did not even know that I had needs, and I certainly didn't know how to prioritize, much less communicate them. So to me, yes, I was a people pleaser. I would say I wasn't pleasing myself, but there's a complex step there that pleasing others was what made me happy in a way. Like it was the only way I knew how to get happiness, maybe is another way to put it at that time.
Right. Or even like a coping strategy, or I don't know what to call it.
It does work, you know, it does bring happiness. It just, I don't think it brings long-term health. So
yes,
I don't like to shit on it and say it's like stupid or not real happiness or whatever, but I just think it's a more limited form of happiness when you're giving your power. I mean, you know, to answer your question, that's the ultimate form of giving your power away, of saying the only way I can be happy is if you're happy. Then you're like completely giving all your power away to the people around you.
Right. And that is something you absolutely cannot control, is other people's happiness.
Totally. Especially when you have cranky in-laws.
Right. Or like toddlers who don't want to do things you want them to do.
Totally.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that shift in awareness for me was revolutionary when I realized like, number one, I'm not responsible for these people's feelings. Like, I can do things to support your growth, but at the end of the day, why am I spinning my wheels trying to create this outcome that really at the end of the day is out of my control? So that is a huge way, I think, to reassume a position of, I don't know, control, power, whatever you want to call it.
Well, and many people live their lives like very reactively. You know, they're so used to, and I think this is a byproduct of, you know, from the very beginning, we're somewhat institutionalized. You know, we're born as Americans, so we're subject to the government. Then we're subject to the school system, and people tell us, we're waiting for everyone to tell us what to do, when to piss, when to show up to recess, when to do math, when to do English. Same thing with parents and churches and then bosses that, you know, a lot of what the skill that precedes coming up with a boundary is asking the question, what makes my boss happy, what makes my teacher happy, or the US government, or my partner or spouse or neighborhood, but it's actually like what makes me happy. And that's it might not be going to school or making what your boss wants or something that your partner likes. It can be a hard and scary question. That's complex too. It's not just one thing and it's always changing. So just to get in that skill of asking that question, what do I want and need? Because whatever the answer to that is, that's why you create boundaries. But if you don't have that, you know, it just becomes what Gabor Mate calls a counter will, where they're like, go inside. And you're like, no, I'm going to stay outside. you're just like fighting everyone, you know, which is not what, to me, like what the most mature form of boundaries is about. It's not just being your own boss. It's actually about fulfilling what you kind of said, your natural needs, desires, protecting your health.
Yes. Yes. Well, and you're so right. Like if you don't even know what you need and want, then it will, I think, will always be reactive. Like there's just no awareness there to even inform why or what I'm creating this boundary for. So that, and that's a question that a lot of people struggle with. It's a, like, I don't even know. A lot of people tell me. And so yeah, that's probably the starting point. Okay. Well, tell me, let me ask you, if somebody's listening and they're like, oh man, I suck at this. Like, I don't even know where to begin. What would you say is a good first step beyond just this kind of awareness? What would you recommend to help somebody start this boundary setting process?
The first thing that I found helpful for me and maybe my partner and some other people is to take space. You know, a lot of times our reactions are so instinctual. People say, you want to go to the party. We're like, yeah, of course I want to go to the party. Who wouldn't want to go to the party? And this is oftentimes subconscious, where we actually feel like maybe a big part of us thinks we should want to go to the party, you know, but then there's another part of us that's like, man, you know, I've been wanting to read that book and I've gone out 5 nights in a row. And I haven't, you know, written that one letter that I wanted to write now for 2 months. And my book is never going to get written. You know, there's all these like quieter voices. And so mm-hmm. when someone says, do you want to go to a party? To say, you know, let me think about that. And walk away for a minute or a day, whatever it takes. And just create that space and really ask yourself, what do you want, without the pressure of feeling like you need to do the thing. And be careful about talking yourself into things. You know, there's these business practices that people say, it's either a hell yes or it's a no. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not like, fuck yeah, then don't let yourself talk into it, be like, well, I mean, I should, or there's the FOMO or YOLO or all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, one other, I don't know, this is kind of a funny story that was helpful for me, but we went to Montgomery Inn, you know, where we smoke cigars out on that porch.
Yep.
And my partner's friend was there, and there was like these three chairs, and there was three of us, and we're like, where do you want to sit? And there was like, it's complicated, because there was like these heat dishes. It was like cold out, so like, oh, should we sit in this one or that one? And then there's, some of the chairs have views of the river, and some of them don't. And we're all just standing there like a bunch of fucking idiots, staring at these three chairs, waiting for the other person to choose a chair so that we could each take the shittier chair or whatever. It was just one of those awkward, funny situations. And she said, I want to play the what would you do if no one was here game. Which chair would you sit in? Because we were all both just sitting there trying to figure out which chair the other person wanted so that we could sit in the chair that they didn't. And everyone is doing it at the same time, so no one is sitting down. And it was just completely terrible, you know, this terrible situation. And she said, let's play the what would you do if no one was here game. Like, what chair would you sit in if there's no one here? And that's kind of a fun exercise sometimes, to ask the question, if you had no kids, no boss, no nothing, no mm-hmm. friends, what would you do tonight? Is it the party? Would you be looking for a party? Or would you be writing your book or going to a movie by yourself? Or mowing your grass, or, you know, whatever it is, I don't know, lifting weights, doing yoga, but just creating that space from all the expectations so that you could figure that out.
I love that. You know, it's funny, last night, I'll just share, I had this moment where I had a whole night to myself, and I was doing all kinds of things I enjoyed, like I was messing around in my garden. And I had this thought, like, I know in myself, I have this tendency to always kind of want to go engage people. And that's not a bad thing. But I sat with that space that you just described. And I said, because I thought to myself, oh, maybe I should call this person. And more kind of like to fill my night is how it felt, than to really ask myself, what do I want for me? And I inevitably decided, you know what? No, I actually want to watch this really interesting documentary about cults. So I'm going to do that. And it was just this like very subtle shift that where I was, I don't know, there was like an internal pressure that was compelling me to fill my time with somebody else. And instead, I just chose what I wanted that was going to be a solo activity, and it turned out great. And I don't think it would have been bad if I chosen the other one. But again, like, I think what you're saying is, you know, walking away from the externals, the voices, the pressures, the expectations of other people, and getting to the core of what you really want can be kind of unfamiliar, maybe feels a little weird at first, but man, I think the outcome is, I don't know what, it's like maybe a stronger sense of self, or just feeling like your cup is filled or something. So
yeah.
I
mean, even your statement that you said to yourself, maybe I should call this person, you know, implies that you're reacting, like, even if it's to a moral code or like an internal code of like, oh, I should, or I should be hanging out with someone, otherwise I'm a loser, or, you know, but yeah, getting clear of those things. Sometimes it's in the form of people. Sometimes it's in the form of outdated, you know, codes inside of ourselves. What cult documentary was it that you watched?
I was going to tell you about this. It's called Happy, Shiny People.
Ooh, shiny, happy people.
Or shiny. Yeah. Have you seen it?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Oh, it's so good, about the Duggar family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had that book by that guy, Bill Gothard.
Oh.
And like, you know, he talks about how women should dress with like skirt lengths. I don't know if you've got to that yet, but we used to have pictures of those skirts on our dorm room as like a joke. Yeah, it's pretty dark though.
Yeah, it is something. I just, yeah. The cult psychology is fascinating to no end.
Totally.
So, okay, well, I could carry this conversation on for infinity, but for the sake of time, I'm going to try to wrap this up. And I want to ask you the questions I always ask people that
are. Can I say one more thing first?
Yes.
Because this was on your question sheet. And I think it's important, because some people are like, whatever, big deal, boundaries, who cares? And you take it like, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen if I don't take this seriously type of thing? Well, this is what the worst thing that can happen is, I think, in a visual picture, is when you don't prioritize yourself. And let's say that this is for the parents out there, okay? When you don't prioritize yourself, the thing ultimately that you're training your kids, no matter what you're saying, no matter what you're having them read, is to not prioritize themselves. Mm. So in a way, parents love it when kids sacrifice their needs for parents, and we call it obedience and compliance and whatever, all these things, fancy nice words, but it's basically like enforced, like no boundaries. Sometimes we enforce it upon our kids, but when we don't have boundaries ourselves, the people around us that are learning from us, they basically learn not to have boundaries for themselves. And then when we as parents, you know, we all know those stories or what it's like when you see your kids being taken advantage of or being hurt or finding partners or friends that are not looking out for their best interests, and your kids are, you know, surrounding themselves with influences that are actually damaging and hurtful to them. The reason why that happens is because the kids don't know how to look out for themselves. And the irony of this is the way that you teach kids to look out for themselves is by, as a parent, you looking out for yourself. Mm. And it's for some reason, I mean, this is one of those things that happen in therapy, is like, I'm like, oh, I don't care. Who cares if someone walks all over me? But then when you think of someone walking over a kid, you're like, no, that's terrible. But, you know, really, we're all just big kids. And I think we deserve to have, you know, to take those things seriously. And when we do that, the little people around us will learn to take their needs seriously, which is such a cool thing when you're able to see that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this is definitely applied in my life. As the more that I have instilled boundaries for myself, I've noticed that they are much more outspoken with their opinions and with what they want, which,
yeah,
you know, is less convenient for me. But at the same time, I'm like, all right, you know, you're asserting yourself, and to be able to see it that way.
So much better.
It absolutely is. And it's like, then they're autonomous self, right? They have a sense of self when they can do that and be able to articulate that, which will then serve them much better in the long run. So,
and the relationship, I think.
Yes.
Just like we started off by saying, you know, the kindest thing you can do for someone is to tell them the truth. When you teach your kids to tell the truth to you, I think it has the best chance of having a relationship with your kids for the longest amount of time.
Yes. Preach it. I love it. I love it. Okay. Well, let me ask you these two questions real quick. Ben, what are you up to that has you excited lately?
I just put a video. Well, I'm putting a video on YouTube right now about, it's like a year old, because we used to have a YouTube channel, but I haven't done it. But I took my kids to this piano concert, but I totally surprised them. So we drove all the way up to Chicago and they didn't know what it was for. And then once, like, we were like an hour before the concert, I told them. So that's what I was editing all day. So I'm excited about that.
Heck yeah. Do you mind if I, like, can I link that in my show notes if people want to
see? Oh, totally.
It? Awesome. And okay, where can people find out about you if they're like, oh, I want to hear more of his stuff?
Gee whiz. I mean, like, I have an Instagram page, but it's like not really, most people don't like it. Like, it's pretty niche. so I can't really recommend that, but like where I put my work is like on YouTube, probably, like the stuff I think people might more want to see. Or like I have a book on Amazon.
Couple books, right?
Yeah, a couple books.
Yeah.
So I guess that might be the place. I guess you could post links to stuff if you
want.
Let's see. The books. I mean, if you just type my name in Amazon, Ben Crawford. Those are just so, like, none of it talks about boundaries, you know, like.
Yeah, but also I think you kind of live it, so it's. It's conveyed, maybe not explicitly. I mean, I'm saying that as a person who's read your stuff and watched your family in action. So yeah, I'll put all that info in the show notes if people want to go check it out. And I just want to say it's been so much fun to have you, Ben, to talk about this. I feel like it's been a long time coming to have you here. And man, I've learned so much from you, especially as it relates to boundaries. So it's kind of like a full circle moment for me to have you talking about this thing that has really changed my life. So.
Yeah, this is fun. I mean, you said 45 minutes max and we're at 51 minutes right now. So that's quite a bit shorter than our conversations usually go over, though. So,
I know.
So in that way, it's progress.
I know I might not have held my like really strict boundary on time, but like you said, it is progress. So, all right. Well, everyone, I invite you to check out Ben on YouTube, check out his content, and really just thank you for taking the time to tune in this episode. So until next time, I encourage you all to just be a little more bold with your boundaries so that, you know, you can stay closely connected to you and to the people that you love the most.
If this episode resonated with you, I have something that you may love. Part of what helps me live a life free of stress and anxiety is embracing genuine connection with myself and others. Building a coaching business centered on this principle has sparked many of my clients to their own success. So if you're looking for a way to overcome your fears and insecurities while building confidence, I invite you to check out my 12-week program, Connect to Your Core, where I help you discover your authentic self so that you can live a life of passion and purpose. I'll link it in the show notes, so check it out if you're interested. I'm so glad you joined us. So remember to stay connected.